Welcome to this special program from TLV One here in our studios in Buenos Aires, Argentina. We welcome all of you, and we agree that we're going to talk about different aspects of the global system, how it works, and how it functions. In this special program, my co-host here is Adrian Salvucci, which is an international analyst. He wrote a couple of books on
geopolitics.
The Brain of the World.
And right, the mastermind. The world's mastermind.
The world mastermind. And Welcome to the Jungle again.
Welcome to the Jungle, yes. The Jungle of the New World Order. But they're in Spanish.
They're in Spanish. Also, Adrian Salvucci is a host at the program Second Republic Project here in this channel. So thank you for sharing this program.
Yeah.
We are having a special guest.
Very special guest today.
He's arriving in Buenos Aires. He's from the United States.
Exactly.
And we're going to be welcome Dr. David Duke.
Well, it's great to have. Great to be here. And your television work is pretty well known, too, outside of Argentina. And, of course, Mr. Salvucci has gone on my program a lot overseas
many times.
And you have a national treasure in Mr. Salvucci, which you all should really appreciate even more, because the guy is truly a spokesman, not just for the people of Argentina, but for all the freedom-loving people of the world, the people who love true human rights and true freedom.
Thank you.
No doubt. And thank you, David, for being here in our country, in our program especially. I would like to describe that Dr. David Duke is doctor in history. He's a former member of the House of Representatives in the state of Louisiana through 1989 to 1993. He was a political activist of human rights, dignity, and free speech. Talk show host at the RENS Radio Network. Conference speaker, author of books that includes My Awakening, A Path to Racial Understanding in 1998, and A Jewish Supremacist, My Awakening on the Jewish Question, in the 2003. Also wrote a book, The Secret Behind Communism. Dr. Duke has presented his works and views throughout Europe, the US, Middle East, and Russia. His books has been translated in almost 20 languages. He was also guest in different network at the United States, like the BBC, CBS, NBC, CNN, talking about all these geopolitical subjects. He participated in an international conference to review the global vision of the Holocaust in December 2006 in Tehran, Iran, opened by the President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. David, very impressive. Very impressive
curriculum. It's impressive that so many people around the world are opening up to this great danger to the planet, and that is the danger of Zionist supremacism. Mm-hmm. We talk about racism among different peoples. Often Europeans are accused of being racist. Mm-hmm. But we know what the real ultimate racism today. It's the racism found in Israel. And it also goes way beyond Israel, because it's a racism that controls our banking institutions, it controls so many of our governments around the world, and it also controls our media. And that's one reason why I'm so proud to be here with this independent media, because we know the media of the world is not leading our people or the people of the planet to a higher humanity. It leads us to violence, degeneracy, degradation. The Hollywood media teaches our kids drugs and violence and alcoholic dispensation, all these kinds of things, rather than drugs, making higher people, higher values and value people. And so the only way you can counter that is by doing things like you do, sir, to create a media where you can tell the people the truth and you give them the real values to stand by.
That's what we carry the name of the channel, no?
Yes.
But it makes it important. Dr. Duke, I would like to hear from you. how you see the scene of the political in the United States? How is the political scene in the United States today, and how that political impacts in the global system?
Well, I like to talk very frankly, and
there's no censorship here.
That's
zero
right.
Censorship. So you just tell it like it is.
So here's the issue. The United States of America is not controlled by the American people. It's controlled by a tiny percentage of the American people. It's popularly called the Zionists. They control our foreign policy. They dominate our banking. A perfect example is the Federal Reserve Bank, which is the mother of all banks, not just for the United States banking institutions, but for the entire world. The Federal Reserve, over the last three decades, has all had openly radical Zionist chairman and Zionist vice chairman. We had Mr. Alan Greenspan. His vice chair was Mr. Kahn. We had Mr. Ben Shalom Bernanke. That's his real name.
Exactly.
It sounds kind of like a parody, but Shalom, but that's his real name. And his vice chair was Janet Yellen, and now you have Janet Yellen. And her vice chair, by the way, is Stanley Fisher, who was head of the Israeli National Bank.
And the International Monetary Fund, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's really odd to think about a tiny minority of Jews having so much power in, for instance, banking. Now, the media tells us that we need diversity, right? And we need, but this is not diversity when a very tiny group. And this doesn't mean that all Jews are racist or all Jews are bad people. There are certainly many good Jews. I know Jews like Gilad Atzmon, for instance, who's anti-Zionist. And there are certainly decent Jews who act decently toward themselves, their community, and their nation. Mm-hmm. But the organized groups, there's no people on earth that have more groups that work more for what they see as their particular interest in the world. But they condemn everybody else
if they do the same.
They work for their interest. And the truth is that, and this is what I say in my radio program every day, that every people on this earth must have the right to be free and to be independent. I think a lot of people look to America as an example when we declared our independence from the British Empire. I think if I'm right on my history, that you Argentinians had a little problem with the British.
Absolutely, and not so long ago.
A few times, that's right. But that principle, the idea that every nation, every people should control their own destiny, their own future, should have a nation in their own values, traditions, and rule themselves, not be ruled by some far-off entity or some other alien entity. That, to me, is the very core of human rights. And so I believe what these Zionists are doing, again, and it's not just Israel. See, we look at Zionism like an issue with the Palestinians. Of course, the Palestinians, we've had 600,000 Palestinians who were ethnically cleansed, driven from their land through terrorism. Their land was stolen. They are periodically murdered. They are genocided as a people. And Israel is the real terrorist state in the world. But Israel could not have done this to the Palestinians just from the power of Israel itself. The only way that was possible was because of the Zionist influence in all the other nations. And it's not just Israel, then, that's the problem. They really dominate American politics. They control the financing of American elections. They control the printing of American money through the Federal Reserve. They control American foreign policy. Today, our Secretary of State is a man named John Kerry. He comes from the state of Massachusetts. And Kerry is a very traditional Irish name. You might have heard, I don't know if you have it here in this country, but they call it Kerry's Gold.
Exactly.
The butter that comes from Ireland that's world famous, John Kerry. And being a Kerry is very advantageous in politics in Massachusetts. But his true family name is not Kerry. He passed himself off as Irish, but he was a deceiver. His real family name is Cohen. Hungarian Jews, nothing to do, not a drop of Irish blood. So he's our Secretary of State, and when he does America's bidding around the world, he's not doing America's bidding. He is an agent for Israel and the Zionist issue. Now, we can go further and further and further. This is a traditional issue. It's really amazing to see how many foreign ministers around the world are not of the people of that country, not the overwhelming majority, but are another minority. And I know that you have a situation in Argentina where you have an interesting foreign minister that has a certain descent, and he, a lot of people like him in some ways or have good feeling about him. But I really question when push comes to shove, where they're going to come down. Because, well, yeah.
You know, Dr. Duke, what they do very often is they divide themselves and fight amongst themselves. That is happening in Argentina now, but it's to a degree. In a way, one often wonders, are they really fighting amongst themselves, or is it a strategy to advance in their objectives? I was going to ask you a question which you already answered, which was, why does the UN, the United States, become so dangerously involved in the internal affairs of other countries in the Middle East, for example? How do they achieve this? I mean, it's not only on an individual-by-individual basis. You have a Jewish foreign secretary. Same with Madeleine Albright. She was Bill Clinton's foreign secretary, and one day she found out that she was Jewish.
Supposedly.
She didn't realize that until she was Secretary of State.
She had no knowledge about that.
No, not whatsoever. Now, what are the organizations, which are the key organizations, do you feel, that are used so that they can really put that clout to work in the banking system, in the media, in government, etc., in foreign policy especially?
Well, for me, they do have many organizations, and I would imagine, I bet you, here in Argentina, a relatively small country compared to many in terms of population. I would guesstimate, if that's the right word for it, that there are probably hundreds of different organizations that actively work for some aspect of Jewish interests.
About 160 years.
Well, there you go.
160.
There's no group on earth that does that, but it's not even so much the organizations are simply part of the issue. It is the psychology. The Jewish religion is a very strong religion of, it's more a religion, not of worship of God, as it is basically this chosenness of the Jewish people. Now, that doesn't mean every Jew that goes to synagogue is hateful to other people. But what it is that they are taught from the time they're small about how all they've been persecuted by every nation of the earth. They are taught that they are special people, that they're above people. The Old Testament basically says that. We Christians have a different view of it because when Christ came, we believe that Christ came for all mankind, and that the way to salvation, or the chosen of the world today, are those that accept Jesus, mm-hmm. that accept the word of God. But they don't see it that way. They see it, in fact, the interesting thing is in America, for instance, you have synagogues all over America, and a Jewish author recently wrote a long book and had big articles about it, that 50% of the members of synagogues in America were openly atheist. And many of these were actually leaders of the synagogue. They were leading the prayers in the synagogue.
They were leading
the songs. I mean, you couldn't, you know, obviously most of Argentina is Catholic. By the way, I this is another sense of connection I feel to this country, my district that I was elected in Louisiana, in Metairie, Louisiana, was 80% Catholic. So we have a lot of Catholic.
A common worldview.
We have a Catholic tradition where I was raised in that tradition. And you can't even imagine an open atheist leading Catholic, or even in a lay position, a Catholic church or teaching. So what is the ultimate issue of Judaism? It's really about the Jewish people and the power of Jewish people. Most Jews literally don't believe in an afterlife. So if you don't believe in an afterlife, then the natural way to go about it then is accumulating what you can in this life and passing it to your children, right? So this is the problem. And I do think that the Jewish leaders are not truly helping the Jewish people. I think this is why you've had the reactions against Jews in the past. I think that that they've been damaging to the Jewish people are led and controlled by these elite, the same way that these elite now are powerful enough to control French policy, British policy, American policy, Canadian policy. I just got a letter from a friend in Australia. That's a long way from here.
And they have a lot of clout there, too. Right, they
do. Yes, in fact, he wrote me a story, and I had a big story about, one later in the interview, if you'd like, we can go into some of the media power they have.
Yes.
But I pointed out that of the five major conglomerates of the world, four of them are directly owned by Jews. And again, the tendency is for them to be very dedicated to Israel and Jewish cause. In fact, the Jewish Chronicle says that all five of the largest conglomerates on the planet are all Zionist, pro-Zionist in control. Four of them are owned outright, and in the fifth, which is the Murdoch Empire, they literally have key positions of influence and power.
Exactly.
Every major studio of Hollywood is controlled by Jews. But even the non-private owned or non-stockholder owned studios like the BBC. Mm-hmm. Now the BBC, of course, is the British Broadcast Corporation. Every Britisher pays a tax to support the BBC. The head of the BBC television, which is a television network by cable, comes to Argentina, comes all over the world, is a guy named Danny Cohen.
Exactly. And he is absolutely openly 100%
Zionist. 100% Zionist. Mm-hmm. It seemed like you'd have a person, if it was a British Broadcast Corporation, you'd think like you'd have a person dedicated to the
neutral,
British people,
yeah,
right?
Or objective.
Or to the world. Exactly. So that's how it works. It's a cycle. It's a tribal. The best way to put it, it's a tribalism.
Dr. Duke, let me ask you a question. But before that, I want to share with you and the our viewers a personal story, so
sure.
to speak. Last year, well, I get into trouble with the local Zionist lobbies called Daya and Amia. Amia is well known because
they exist in every country of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. They are particularly powerful. And last year they said that they were going to be suing me and a whole host of things because in one video I said, let's talk about anti-Semitism, which is nothing to do with anti-Zionism. But even the Jewish behavior throughout history shows that throughout the millennia, in all geographies, people, for some reason or another, when Jewish communities get in there, they end up, for some reason, either pushing them aside or controlling them or even expelling them. It's happened throughout centuries. It's happened in different parts of the world. And I said something like the following. Either all humanity has a mental illness called anti-Semitism, except for the tiny Jewish community, or there is something in Jewish behavior, which in the long run ends up getting them into trouble. I gave an example. If I have a fight with the butcher, the local newsman, the cop, my neighbor upstairs and my neighbor downstairs, I can't say they're all a bunch of sick people. I'm the good one. Maybe there's something about me. And when I explained that, obviously they went ballistic, so to speak.
I can imagine.
Now, the question which I'd like to pose to you is because you coined a phrase which we are using here, which is a very good phrase, Jewish supremacism. Because, you know, we always talk about anti-Semitism, okay, and they will undo the phrase, they will use it very arbitrarily, but we never speak about the real root, which is what you describe as Jewish supremacism. Right. Share with us your thought on what is Jewish supremacism from,
well, first
from
all,
your
let's,
viewpoint.
Let's give a little historical background of what you said about Zionism and maybe what's the cause for this. Not only does this suggest that there's something wrong with the other 99.9% of humanity, they literally say this. I mean, their own scholars, and that's what my books do, is, and that's why they hate me and they hate my books so badly, because I quote their scholars, their leaders, their authorities. And I don't quote obscure people. I quote the leading spokesman for the Jewish
that
people.
You can verify just by going to the book or the newspaper or whatever.
I have over 1,000 footnotes in My Awakening and all the citations where people can go and find them for themselves. In fact, I say to people, if you find something wrong here, tell me. I say more than that. If I'm lying to you about any of this, I'll quit. You know, I'll go to work for the Jews tomorrow if what I'm saying is, if you can prove what I'm telling you is are lies. I tell the truth. And so they themselves say that anti-Semitism, there's no logic to anti-Semitism, that people are just anti-Semitic because of the way they're born. Yes. There was a Jewish scholar who did a novel about me. She was a leader. She was a famous Jew by the name of Irma Kurtz. And I know you have I think you probably have Cosmopolitan magazine in this country like
sure.
around the world.
Yes.
She was chief editor of Cosmopolitan. She came to Louisiana to interview me for a Times article in Britain. And she came to me and she wrote a novel. And the novel, and by the way, in the Times article, there was no hateful speech by me. because there wasn't. There was no recording or any speech like that. There was no speech. There was no hate against Jews. There was nothing. But in her novel, she made up me giving a hateful speech. In a novel, you see, which wasn't my name. She just could write anything she wanted. And she said that she came to this speech and she heard this person, and she's out in the rural Louisiana. She said it in Mississippi, but it was like Louisiana. And I was, a person of my character was giving the speech. And she says, so here's this white fanged, white monster. And she says that all these people in the audience, she said they never knew a Jew. They didn't even know any Jews, but she said anti-Semitism brooded inside them anyway, carried on the tip of the Gentile sperm, and born in their offspring, like fear and resignation have been born into mine. She literally, talk about a blood libel. And that's basically what they do, is they say that Gentiles, in fact, all people of the world, they give these surveys all the time about how one quarter of all humanity hates Jews, and for no reason. They literally are giving a blood libel for humanity. They're saying that we're just a bunch of evil people who have this genetic flaw that makes people hate Jews, even though Jews are so wonderful. The reason why people have an opposition to Jewish power is not because they're Jews. It's because, and that's what they try to say, it's because of what their leaders do. My latest book is The Secret Behind Communism. You can get that through my website, davidduke.com. We mail it around the world, by the way. And in this, I spent a lot of time in the archives and studying in Russia and doing research on the Russian Revolution. The Russian Revolution is not the Russian Revolution.
It wasn't about Russians.
It wasn't done by Russians. It was financed, it was led entirely by Jews in the beginning. Even Lenin was part Jewish. Trotsky was the first head of the Red Army, who was Bronstein. Zinoviev, Kamenev.
From Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's right. And the chief financier of the Russian Revolution was Jacob Schiff of New York, international banker. Now again, that shows you the tribal aspect of this. Now, the theory is, a communist is certainly the opposite, quote, the opposite of a capitalist. So why in the world would one of the richest bankers in the world support a Bolshevik revolution, which is supposed to take away all private property, mm-hmm. right, and nationalize all industry? Why would the richest banker in the world do this? And the answer to that question, of course, is that he was a Jewish patriot who was also a Zionist, by the way. And he hated Russia because they saw the Russian Tsar as an anti-Semite. Well, the reason why the Russian Tsar to them was anti-Semitic, because he was a Russian patriot. And he saw the exploitation of Russia by these international banksters. He was a dedicated Christian. He saw the destruction of Christian values going on in his country and in the Western world. So he financed communism, helped support communism, as a means to destroy his Christian enemy, what they considered to be a Jewish enemy. Now, in Russia, we hear about the Holocaust every day of our lives. And by the way, I'm not one of these people. I don't go around saying that there weren't terrible things happened to Jews. There were persecutions, and there were Jews who were murdered, and there were many horrible things that went on. But you must also understand the greatest Holocaust in the history of the planet Earth was not the German Holocaust, it was the Bolshevik Holocaust. And every major historian who knows anything about history knows that 20 to 30 to 40 million people perished in Russia, and then in the rest of communism around the world, many more millions more in Pol Pot in Cambodia, 40 million in China, all around the world. And even in China, the people who spread communism there were actually Jews, believe it or not. That's a fact. And I have all these documents in my book, The Secret Behind Communism.
I'm going to be asking you about Ukraine, but since you mentioned the genocide perpetrated by the Soviet communists, in Ukraine alone, Stalin killed 6.5 million people from hunger, from famine in the 30s.
And you know who the man was that actually did the mass murder? His name was Gingrich Yagoda.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
And I have an article in my book, for instance. It's on my website, davidduke.com. And those of you, by the way, you can use a Google Translator. They work pretty good. Mm-hmm. They're not perfect, but people who...
You can get by with it, yeah.
Because I know you'll be translating this and putting subtitles and everything in this. Yeah. But I have an article from Ynet News, which is the biggest Israeli website, very popular website in Israel, called Ynet News from Israel. They have a big article by a Jewish historian, Stephen Plocker, and the headline of the article is called Stalin's Executioners. He said, "We must never forget that some of the greatest mass murderers of the 20th century were Jews." And he goes on to talk about Genrikh Lagota, talking about how he was responsible. He ran the gulags, where over 40 million people were incarcerated. Many died, others didn't die. In Holodomor in Ukraine, 7 to 9 million people died. And in fact, I took my doctorate, in fact, in Ukraine, so I'm very familiar with the Holodomor. And he literally, in the article, talks about the fact that Lagota was directly responsible for 10 million people dying. He was the guy that ran the gulag system and did this. And the funny thing is, he has a mustache almost like Hitler. Just a real short little mustache. And if you saw a picture of him, you might even be mistaken, thinking that maybe it's Hitler,
yeah.
Right? But nobody knows his name.
Steven Spielberg makes no teary movies about it.
Well, think about it this way. We have 30 million Christians die. We have Jewish Hollywood, and I've talked about earlier that how every major studio is controlled by Jews in Hollywood. They even took over Walt Disney. Mm-hmm. That was the last pro-Christian studio. Yeah. They called him, by the way, an anti-Semite. And they infiltrated with Eisner and Iger. And every studio, and yet... If you ask someone, have you ever seen a single movie? You've got Schindler's List, you've got the Holocaust movie.
Documentaries.
Sophie's Choice, all these movies.
One after the other.
Here's the biggest, most horrific mass murder of humanity in the history of humankind. More people were killed in the Soviet mass murder than all the mass murders of all the wars and all the tyrants of history combined. And yet no movies.
Yeah.
Not
that's
a single.
That's the point.
I ask people.
No Psy War.
I ask you at home, just name me one movie that shows the biggest mass murder, the murder machine of the Soviets. Just I ask you, listening at home, just tell me the name of the movie. Tell me. And I challenge you.
You know, one of the things that we try to do from TLV1 here in Buenos Aires is to what America is called joining the dots.
Yeah.
And you were just speaking about Yagoda, the Soviet mass murderers as a whole, as a regime, financed by, amongst others, Leo Bronstein, financed by Jakob Schiff, who also had as a partner Mr. Warburg, who founded the Federal Reserve banking system, whose bank was Kuhn, Loeb and Company in New York, which later merged into Chase Manhattan. Mr. Schiff was one of the founders of the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. And when you start joining all these dots, you figure, well, wait a minute, mass murder in the Soviet Union, the guy who founded the Red Army, Lenin, the Council on Foreign Relations, mega bankers, what's going on here? So that's my question to you. What is going on here? Because this is something which is beyond ideology. It's not. It's what you said at the beginning of the program. It's not that, oh, it's capitalists fighting communists. Perhaps at this level, yeah, but way up at the top of the power pyramid, it seems that it's just one family affair and everybody getting cozy, cozying up to each other.
This is something that I try to do in my work, is try to educate people about it. It's so difficult to talk about Jewish tribalism and talk about the fact that this is a racist ideology, the supremacism, as you talked about. And to do so can often cost you a lot in your life. It's difficult. So a lot of people, they take what they consider to be an easier path. So they talk about, quote, the conspiracy. What is the Spanish word you use for that?
Conspiracy.
Exactly. The conspiracy. They talk about the insiders. They talk about the
Illuminati and the
Illuminati.
Illuminati
was a little group of strange people 300-400 years ago. You know, but here's the issue. If you look at these organizations and you look at the power, this so-called conspiracy could not function except that it had a common denominator. It has an ethnic root. And I'll give you an example. I've heard Alex Jones is a person in America who talks about the conspiracy a lot. And he says it's a bunch of Nazis in Germany behind some conspiracy. And it's so ridiculous. And they said, yeah, that's why they're opening up the floodgates of immigration where the Germans are going to be not even around any longer, right? That's why they support their worst enemy, the Israeli, right? They give them submarines that can carry nuclear weapons around the world. Why would Israel need submarines carrying nuclear weapons to the shores of America, for that matter, Argentina, if they wanted to? You have to look at master and slave, so to speak. There are a lot of rich Gentiles and a lot of Gentiles that go along with them. And the way I like to use the comparison, maybe this is too difficult or too hard a comparison, I compare it like Dracula, you know, like these bloodsuckers of Goldman Sachs and the international banks and who push in these wars and all the rest of it. And they bite, you know, the Dracula bites you, and then you become a proselyte, you do their service. But none of the proselytes have any illusion about who's really in charge. And the truth is that, and this is no doubt about this in my mind, there are a lot of major corporations, like, for instance, Microsoft, and there's Apple Corporation is the biggest corporation in the world. But if tomorrow Mr. Cook of Apple came out and said, we despise this 25,000 Palestinians who have been murdered or maimed by the Israelis in Gaza, they're still stealing the Palestinian land, they're not letting the Palestinians go back to the place they were born, they're murdering people all over the world, they're fostering these wars, they were behind the Iraq war, behind the Afghanistan war. We are going to join the international boycott, the disinvestment of Israel. I promise you, they would be destroyed as a company, because what they would do in America, the judiciary in America is controlled by these Jewish Zionists, right? So they'd be making rulings, antitrust rulings, and saying this company's
like
too big.
Yeah,
it's going to say this is going to have to be split up. They would be filing suits against them, and then their agents in the courts would be doing it. They would be in France. They have massive power in France and in Great Britain of authorities. They've got some power here too in Argentina, and they would start doing. They'd find another excuse. Oh, Apple's too big, and we want other competition from other companies. And then they would start putting tariffs, or they would start blocking them, or they would do patent suits against them. That's the reality. That's the reality.
Do you believe that this supremacy makes them more intelligent than the rest, or do they have any kind of moral?
This is such an important question. And this is what they want you to believe. The story that they give everyone is that, well, if we have all this power in Hollywood, it's because we're just smarter, and maybe we work harder. You can't deny the fact they have strong education in their community, and they do work hard for what they want, for their goals, and they're not a stupid people. They're smart. But if you really look at the relationship between their power and their intelligence, it has nothing to do with their intelligence. I'll explain to you why. Let's just say that Jews, on average, were 50% smarter than us, which there's no evidence that there's anything near that. But let's just say
theoretical
that.
Theoretical purposes.
Okay. In America, they are 2% of the population. So maybe we could suggest that instead of 2%, right, of the Hollywood, maybe they'd be 4%. Instead of 2% of the media, maybe they're double. Or instead of 2% of Harvard and the Ivy League, they'd be maybe 4 or 5%, maybe, right?
But they're
56 or 57. Exactly. In America, it's a perfect example. And by the way, this is something important I need to say to my Argentinian friends and the people of Argentina. I really want to defend the American people. And I know that when you see the policies of America, a lot of you, and they're very bad policies. The wars that we're getting involved in, they're trying to crush you financially in Argentina. As an American, I oppose these things so much. But please don't blame the average American any more than you should blame the average Argentinian. We can get mad at people for not standing up, but you don't blame the victim. You've got to blame the people who are victimizing, the predator.
You don't. They make us generalize.
Right. So let's look at America, and this is a perfect example. To the idea that European peoples, and we're mostly a European country, the European peoples can't write plays or do television programs or do media, that we have to have Jews to control it, is ridiculous. We did have somebody in Western civilization by the name of William Shakespeare. We did have the great Greek traditions, Goethe. We had the great Russian writers. We had the Dostoevskys of the world. And in fact, if you look at the magnificence of Western civilization, I mean, the Jewish element is this much, the non-Jewish, the Christian element is this much. And it's more than that, really. And you look at and you look today, what are they doing with this media they control in Hollywood? Promotion of every movie, practically, for young people, including young people in Argentina, teaches young kids that you're supposed to get drunk out of your head, right? You're binge drunk. You drink. In fact, they have drinking games in all these movies where you drink till you pass out. This is really healthy for a young girl. She's not going to put herself in a good position if she does that, right? There are actually in America and around, in America alone, there's 25,000 kids that die every year. They drink so much alcohol that they die from toxic poisoning. They get so much alcohol in the system, their brain shuts down and they die, and many others are paralyzed, they hurt for life. And then, of course, alcoholism strikes down millions of people in your country. All over the world it strikes down.
Drugs.
And of course, and they control, again, it's the same element that controls the production of alcohol, and they tell us in the media, and I by the way, I'm not anti-alcohol. I like a good beer once in a while, and maybe a good glass
Argentinian
of wine.
Wine,
but
sure.
I don't like the idea that our people, and every day in the media, we're taught that we're always supposed to be drinking. We celebrate, we get married, we drink. Somebody dies, we drink. We lose our girlfriend, we drink. That's their psychology.
When you work, you work.
Exactly, and we do. I do think that a few drinks once in a while are fine, but we do drink too much, and we do know that it affects millions of people. Automobile accidents. You don't have as good sense. For instance, you go out and you commit a crime, maybe where maybe you'd have better sense. You do things that are dangerous that hurt you. Children make very big mistakes sexually, obviously, right? I mean, the unwanted pregnancies and worse, diseases. I mean, is there any parent who's watching this program who would like the thought of her beautiful young girl, right, getting so drunk she's unconscious, basically, among a bunch of young men who are very aggressive, right, and who have a very strong sexual desire? I mean, is there anyone that knows? But this is the effect of all
Nobody
this.
Nobody in his right mind would do.
You know,
one of the things that, well, you probably know this because it's rather typical of a stereotype of Latin America, Yankee go home. And we make a very special point in our channel, in our programs, to say it is not the American people or the British people or the That's European good. People. We describe it, actually we call it the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The United States, Britain, Europe, and Israel, or rather, the power structure embedded inside the United States, the power structure embedded inside the UK, Europe, and even Israel, and that has a huge component of Jewish supremacism, unfortunately.
Well, people often say that, you know, media doesn't affect the culture, that's just a reflection of culture. That's not true. I mean, the truth is, if you teach a child, I mean, look at Lady Gaga, which is promoted by our Jewish media. And here's a woman, right? She shows herself, they put on a nun's habit with a big Christian cross, engaging in gang sex. I mean, this is sick. And these
sick. And Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah. And if you actually read
Madonna too,
that's right. And if you take a look, and by the way, it affects also African Americans as well. African Americans are suffering from this with this gangster rap. And they even have some of that gangster rap among some of your kids. It's gangsterism, it's thuggery, it's pro-drug use, sexual license. Everything that destroys lives. I believe in nature. I believe in physical fitness. eating healthy, living healthy. I don't want to get drunk to enjoy life. I want to enjoy and smell the roses. I want to climb the mountains and smell the air and feel my blood. You know, all of us, in terms of our families and the things we love, to feel the presence of a beautiful, for me as a male, to feel the presence of a beautiful woman and to care for her and love her in the right way. That's what life
Those
is about.
Values.
It's not about taking some drug. It's not about wasting yourself in disillusion.
It's escapism.
Yes, exactly.
We should go to a break.
Sure.
Let's do it.
And after that, but I want to ask you two questions, and so I'll throw them, and then we'll go to our break. What's your take on Ukraine? We spoke about that. And what's your take on Islamic State?
Okay. We offer a break, and we will be right back. We are back here in this special of TLB 1 with Adrian Salvucci and our guest, Dr. David Duke. We've been talking about all this supremacy. I would like you to tell us how is the roots of that supremacy, how do they get there, and how do they do in order to accommodate themselves in the structure of power?
I think that's maybe the most important question of the night, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, and I can go into some details for you. Maybe the best ways to describe it is, I know that Argentina was playing another team in the World Cup a while back.
Oh, yeah.
Now, imagine you have two football teams, okay?
We play a lot of teams.
And one team, you teach everybody, you're just individuals. You know, you don't work as a team. You don't give to the other person on the team. You're just all individuals, right? And the other team are taught, and they work together. They are together. They train together. They study together. They taught to help each other and support each other. And which team is going to dominate the field? It's exactly right. So that's what's going on here. The best example I have, I touched on this earlier, is in America. The elite of America come from a series of universities called the Ivy League. Mm-hmm. It's Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and about a number of other universities. The most famous, and every Argentinian just about, and every person in the world has heard of Harvard, which is the elite university. Harvard was entirely built by European Christian men and women. Every brick in place, every academic position of the school. Today at Harvard, Jews, who are 2% of the population, now have 25% of the Harvard students. All right, and there are tests. There was a Jewish gentleman who I much respect named Ron Unz who did a study of all this, and he showed that they had 14 times more Jews in Harvard. This is the elite. You graduate from Harvard, you go anywhere in America, okay? It's like a ticket to success. 14 times more Jews than their ability merited. European Americans, which were the people who, every writer of the Declaration of Independence, Constitution of the United States, every founder of this country was a European American, of European roots, European Christian American. We've dropped from 90% of the country to 60% of the country. By the way, it's a similar drop that Palestine has had. In what's Israel. But anyway, that's exactly right. So what is the situation? So 65% of the people, European Americans, were 70%, by the way, of the top performing secondary school students, you know, the high school students. European Americans are now, and I don't want to have you guess, I'll just tell you, but it's a shocking number. At Harvard and the entire Ivy League, European Americans are now only 20% of the students. This is the United States of America. This is a 65% European American country. This is a 70% of the top students, 20% of the universities that are elite. David Brooks, who's the chief columnist for the Jewish New York Times, did a big story called The Chosen, getting in, boasting about, quote, in his own words, the takeover of America, the Jewish takeover. He used those words, not me. Now, you say the Jewish takeover of America, or Argentina, or anywhere in the world, but he boasted about it. And this is the one last comment on this. It's such an important point because a lot of people get the idea that it's because, well, we're not so smart, or maybe they're smarter, maybe they just deserve it. Harvard and all major universities in America have an honor society. Now, this honor society is not chosen before you go to school. It's chosen after 3 or 4 years of university. So it's chosen from the students who did the very best, the most brilliant students, the students who studied, who worked,
the best and
who
brightest.
Got the best grades, who did the best papers, who showed the most brilliance, right, at Harvard. So here's the Jews at Harvard. They're 25% of the students. And here's the European Americans at Harvard, and they're only 20% of the students. 5-4. Now imagine, again, we'll use a sports analogy. Everybody loves sports in the world. Basketball, two basketball teams. One team has 5 players, the Jews, right? The other team only has 4 players, the Jews. I mean, the Gentiles. Not the Gentiles, the European Americans, okay? Not the Christian Americans, okay? So guess how the Phi Beta Kappa figures come out. Jews who are 25% of Harvard earn 11%. And this is based on your grades, your performance. Only 11% of Phi Beta Kappa. European Americans who are outnumbered 20% by them, 4 players against 5 players, they score 55% of the outstanding students. So those of you who want to believe, you know, the media is always telling you about Einstein, and they're always presenting that Jews are the, if Jews are running the world, it's because they're smarter than everybody else. You know, there are a lot of smart Jews, and I respect smart Jews, okay? But all that, I'll tell you what that is. That belief and that thing they preach, that is true racism.
Discrimination.
That's true supremacy, isn't it? And I don't like that. I believe that everybody should be judged on their merit. I'm not trying to put down Jews, but I don't like being told that the reason why Jews control our country is because we're a bunch of dummies. Europeans built modern civilization.
Absolutely.
And culture.
Absolutely.